This is the United States Eventing Association's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. On this week's episode, we'll be continuing our series of the U.S. Equestrian Federation's under 25 winter training list riders when we hear from Margaret Stocker. But first of all, Tick Maynard joins us to reprise the presentation he gave at the 2015 annual meeting about how event horses learn. Tick, welcome to the program. I think this is the first time you've been on the USEA podcast, so an extra special welcome.
Thank you very much.
Give us an overview, Tick, if you would, to start off with, as to what the premise was for this.
So it's something that I've been interested in for a few years now. And I first got interested when I started with Karen and David O'Connor, and they started explaining to me how natural horsemanship works. And I talked to Lauren Key for a little bit about that as well when I was at their place in Ocala. And then I started to dig a little deeper and start to figure out how those theories of natural horsemanship applied to different disciplines. So whether it was dressage or eventing or show jumping or even the Western disciplines, I started to realize that no matter what you're doing, the theories of how horses learn are the same, although the techniques or the tools might differ. So just because you're in an English saddle and you're riding in dressage, or you're in a Western saddle and you're riding in reining or cutting, the way that the horses learn is the same. And that was basically what prompted me to approach USDA and pitch this idea of doing a talk on how horses learn.
Give us an idea then where we should start in our thinking and our approach to this, Tick.
Okay, well, basically the idea is to first of all start with why do horses learn? And that's backing up quite a bit. But the reason why horses learn, the number one reason, is to survive. So if something scares them or something is going to eat them or attack them or hurt them or make them feel uncomfortable, they learn to run away from it. And that's basically what sensitization is, to learn to react to something. And all animals, to a certain extent, go through that. And maybe even some plants. I'm not too sure about that. But the second thing why horses learn is that they can't run away from everything. So if they did, they'd never have time to eat or drink or rest. Everything that scared them, they ran away from. So the second broad premise of learning is habituation, which means that they start to become used to something that might have been initially scary, but they learn that it's not scary anymore. So those are the two broad things. And then beyond that, basic survival, you have horses that learn new things out of playfulness or curiosity. And you see that quite a lot in young horses, in colts and in fillies, that they get engaged with the world in a way that goes beyond survival. So those are the sort of the three key elements, sensitization, habituation, and then learning not only to make their life more safe and more comfortable, but also for play or curiosity.
Okay, well, clearly curiosity is one thing with the young horses, isn't it, for sure? What sort of tools do you have in your head when you're approaching this subject? I mean, give us an idea of what people should be looking for, you know, specifically that will help them understand.
Well, one of the biggest things I'd like people to understand is that horses think, they have learning ideas that are similar to people, because all animals can learn in similar ways. But they do think a little bit differently, and they're especially motivated differently. So when people talk about a horse being smart or a horse being dumb, often it's not that a horse is smart or dumb. Rather, it's that they're either motivated or not motivated. And horses are really motivated, generally speaking, by four broad things. So you've got safety is one of them. Like if they're fearing for their life, that will motivate them to run away. The second thing is if they're comfortable or not. So if, you know, there's flies on them, they want to leave where the flies are and go to maybe a windy place to keep the flies off. Or if it's really sunny, they want to leave the sunny place and go to a shady place where they're more cool. So you've got safety, you've got comfort. The third thing is food. They're going to look for food, whether it's grass, you know, in the wild, or it's carrots, or they like the barn because there's grain in the stall. And the fourth thing is playfulness and curiosity, right? So when you're working with a horse, probably the vast majority of what all of us use to train horses is we're using comfort as a motivator. So we're making them feel uncomfortable when we want them to not do something. For example, you know, if the horse is walking towards us and we want them to stop, we'll put pressure in front of them, which makes them feel uncomfortable, and they'll stop or back up. Same thing, the bit makes them feel uncomfortable, and then when they slow down, we take a little tension out of the reins. If you want the horse to go forward, you put your leg on, which makes it a little uncomfortable feeling, and then when they go forward, you take your leg off. Same thing if you're trailer loading a horse. You put pressure behind them. When they go on, you take the pressure off. So pressure is the vast majority of what we do. But if you start to watch the real artists of horsemen, not only on the ground, but you know, under saddle as well. You know, they'll start to use other things to motivate the horses, whether it's the horse's natural ability to want to play, or whether it's food, or whether in certain circumstances they're using fear, but they have a whole arsenal of tools at their disposal, and they're really tuned into what the horses are thinking and feeling at any moment.
Well, one of the things that you know, a lot of people, you know, think is the obvious thing to do when you're training and when you want that horse to learn is to reward them in some way. Are you a believer in treats? Or how do you confirm that the lesson has been learnt, and give the horse confidence in his learning process?
So usually the biggest treat you can give a horse is the release of pressure. So there's a great saying, which is that pressure motivates and the release of pressure teaches. So if you're asking the horse to go forward, you put your leg on, and when the horse goes forward, you take your leg off. I mean, a horse that hasn't had a person on its back before does not innately understand to go forward from somebody squeezing around the rib cage any more than if I walked up to you and squeezed you around the rib cage that you'd walk gently forward. Like, the horses just don't know that right off the bat. But they learn through pressure and release. And that release is probably the single biggest way that will help a horse learn something. And people often, when a horse is learning something for the first time, they don't give them, a big enough release or a long enough release. And I think that's because a lot of people haven't, they're involved with horses from a riding perspective rather than a training perspective. There's a big difference between riding a horse that's already trained versus training a horse to do something for the first time. And I think if everybody had the opportunity to at least watch somebody train a horse where the horse is learning something for the first time, it would be a big help. In terms of horses getting treats, I'm definitely not against that. I think if you watch how horses learn in the wild, the vast majority of the time they're not learning stuff, you know, through the direct reward of food, but occasionally they might, and I'm not against that. I just think that you want to start to figure out what's most effective, not just, you know, people like food, people like praise, people like recognition, people like gifts, but horses don't necessarily like that. Horses like to feel comfortable, they like to feel relaxed, they like to understand what's going on, and those are the really big treats for a horse.
And of course, young horses, particularly Tick, they have different levels of confidence depending on, you know, where they came from before you got them in your training hands. And there will always be the shy one in the litter, so to speak. That one takes a little bit longer. It's all about patience, isn't it? Just to give us a little bit of a sense of what you do to develop that confidence in the learning, because they may not be as fast as learners as other horses.
Yeah. That's probably one of the art, you know, that's the art of training, is knowing how fast to take things. And sometimes you want to be really patient, and sometimes, you know, you want things to happen now. And the people that have had so much experience of training thousands, tens of thousands of horses, they know exactly how fast and how far they can push every horse. Of course, it's always better to go a little too slow than a little too fast. As soon as you cross the line and start going too fast, then, the tension in the horse and the misunderstanding of the horse, over-facing horse, that'll catch up with you later on big time. And that's not fun for you or the horse, or, you know, even people watching, that's not a fun thing to see. But also, I think, like I said before, one of the biggest misunderstandings with horses is people talk about, the horse being slow to learn, but often it's not slow to learn. It's simply what's motivating the horse to learn rather than the horse being smarter or dumber. But I do agree some horses do lack, all horses sort of have different innate levels of curiosity or different innate levels of confidence. And I think some trainers do better with more confident horses, and some trainers do better, with mares or with geldings or with slower learners. And I think that the trick is to just be honest with yourself about what you're good at. And if it's something that you're not good at, or you don't feel confident in, you take your time or you ask another professional for help. And I think it's always possible to replace, skill or experience with patience. I think you're absolutely right. Patience is the key thing there.
And just finally, to take away from this tick, in terms of educating that horse and reinforcing that lesson, do you then come out the next day with that horse and repeat that lesson in some way before you move on, or do you just move on? Give us an idea of what that pattern looks like.
I don't think I'm going to even go there, because I think that totally depends on the situation, on the horse, on what the horse is learning. I mean, sometimes you can repeat something right away the same day or later that day. Sometimes you can repeat it the next day. Sometimes you can let the horse sit and think about it and not repeat that for days or weeks at a time. I mean, the amount of thought that goes into training horses on a day-to-day basis, for myself, but also studying some of my heroes of the sport, just goes to show how little you can actually learn by rote, how little you can say, like, this is the ABCD of riding, and how much of it is experience. The first person that I studied that really showed me how thoughtful they were about training dressage horses was Rainer Kunke, and he wrote a book called The Pollerick about his German sport horse that he took to the Olympics and did very well on. And if you read his book, like, the amount of thought about what he did every single day with that horse and how he got to know that horse is incredible. So, I'm not going to go out on a limb and say, tell anybody how to train their horse in that sense, no.
Well, of course, it is instinctive, isn't it? As you say, you talk about experience, Tick, but I think, one of the messages that you probably would like to take away, not putting words in your mouth here, but for people to take away from this, there's so much comes from experience of working with the horse and getting to know their learning patterns, but also the instinctive reaction as a trainer in that moment, in that split second.
Yeah, I agree. I think, but I think that's also something that comes when you first start learning, you go through like the techniques of what to do, eyes up, heels down, or if you're working on the ground with the horse, how to lead the horse or send the horse left or right or load on a trailer. So you learn all these technique things. And then as your journey, with horses progresses, hopefully you start to learn more about the theory. So you start asking, like, why am I doing this? Or why is he doing this? And starting to figure out better ways to do it or ways to understand it on a deeper level. And I think the more interested you get, the more curious you get. Like, George Morris has been in this sport for decades, and in every article you see about him, you still read that he has bookshelves and bookshelves of reading material and he's constantly reading about what other trainers are thinking and doing. And he has many, many books on natural horsemanship. He's done clinics with Buck Brannaman. He just appeared recently in the DVD series with Jonathan Field. And all these people are trying to broaden their understanding of how horses think and feel in natural horsemanship. And the more that you understand technique and the more you understand theory, the better your instincts will get. And the instincts are what kicks in when you don't have time to think.
That's a very good way to summarize it, Tick. I think there's a lot more to unpack on this topic, which I'd like to maybe explore in the future if you would come back on the program.
Well, I'd be happy to. I could actually probably talk about this for hours.
Wonderful.
As my wife will tell you.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for your time, Tick, and coming on the program this week.
All right. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And now, in our continuing series in which we profile the riders on the under-25 winter training list, Margaret Stocker joins us from Area 5. Hi, Margaret. Welcome to the program.
Hello.
Well, tell us, first of all, a little bit about where you are and what you're doing in school right now and how much time you spend with your horse in training.
Yeah, for sure. I'm a senior in high school this year. And right now I'm based in Argyle, Texas, and I'm training with Mike Huber. But this winter I'm going to Florida to train on the U18 team with Leslie Law, and that will be this coming week for me. And then after that, I'm actually staying in Florida for 2 months to train with Sinead Halpin. And then we're going to North Carolina for 2 months and then New Jersey for 2 months. And we'll be competing and training for 6 months altogether. And I'm working for Sinead, so.
Right, right. Obviously, this is going to be a really big year for you. You're just 17 now and unable to spend this much time in training with your horse, Secondhand Rose. Let's talk about the partnership you have with her. How did it all, come about, Margaret?
Well, I actually, I got her 3 years ago from my farrier, actually, and he found this horse, and she hadn't done anything. She'd been broken, just saddle broke, but she'd never really had any formal training at all. And he took this horse because she was a wild mare. No one could really ride her. She was kind of crazy. She is still crazy, but she's a good girl. he broke her, and then I leased her for 2 months and had a really good partnership with her, and we ended up buying her. I named her Secondhand Rose because she had been passed down and no one had really given her a chance. And also, Secondhand Rose is also from my favorite musical, Funny Girl. And Rose is a funny girl. And so that's how I came up with the name. So I've had her for 3 years, and I had her for 10 months with Mike Huber, and she had done nothing. She'd only jumped a little bit. And after 10 months, we moved through the levels. We did one novice and then moved up to training because she's very brave on cross country, and she's just novice was way too boring for her. And then we did 4 trainings and moved to prelim, and that was really fast, but she didn't ever seem to mind moving fast. So we went on to do a 1-star, and then we did another 1-star and qualified for Young Riders for Area 5, and then got chosen for the team and went to Area 5 Young Riders in Kentucky, and had a great time there. I actually fell off first year I went to Young Riders, 3 jumps from home, in the water.
Oh, dear.
And we recovered from that the next year and actually moved up to intermediate, and did a couple intermediates and won a CIC 2-star. And then I didn't qualify for a CCI 2-star to do at Young Riders. I never got the chance to get to do one. So I just went ahead and did the CCI 1-star because thought it would be a good idea to go back and conquer the water again. We ended up winning the silver medal with my team, and I think I placed 11th place. I placed 11th individually, so that was exciting from a big group of people. And that's been this year, I think, and done a few intermediates. Recently, we haven't been showing. She's had a long time off, getting a lot of pasture time, and now we're going to get back into the swing of things soon.
Yes, when heading to Ocala, obviously, to get with the team there, training with Leslie Law. So what do you think you'll be mostly concerned with focusing on during that training period, Margaret? What do you think she needs, and what do you think you need?
I definitely think dressage is probably our least strong point in all the phases. She's good at dressage. We make good scores, but I think we could definitely improve And she's also a very hot thoroughbred. So I think maybe focusing on relaxing would help a lot. But definitely dressage and a little bit of cross country. I think everything we can improve on, there's always room to improve on everything, but definitely dressage for me and Rose. So.
And when you look further ahead down as the year unfolds and the season unfolds, depending on how she goes, what would be your long-term plans with her?
I would like to complete a CCI 2-star eventually these next months, hopefully. And I would like to move up to advanced when the time is right for both of us. I think that would be a very awesome experience for us.
And how old is she now?
She's 9.
Right. Okay. So lots more opportunities there for the future then with her, hopefully. Well, terrific. Yes. And so what are you most looking forward to then about training with Sinead? This is another wonderful opportunity for you to be based with her.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I actually, going up there, my friend Olivia Cliver, she actually got me into the position. So she was like, you totally need to do this. And so I'm really excited about doing that. I'm excited to learn new things and get a fresh point of view of things. And just everything that I need to work on, dressage, show jumping, and cross country, partnership, and also I've never been a working student before, so I'm really excited for that position to learn discipline and everything about running a barn. So all of it is going to be an amazing experience.
Well, it certainly will, a wonderful opportunity for you. You obviously will be able to ride more horses when you're with Sinead. Do you have any other horses to ride at the moment?
Well, recently I had another horse. He was a warm blood. His name was Oakley, but I just sold him actually because I really wanted to focus on Rose, and also he was a little bit older. He's 10, and he never had any training. So I put like 6 months of training on him, and then I sold him. Just as a novice eventer. So, and he's been good.
Okay, well, lots to look forward to, as you said, and developing that partner and realizing mm-hmm. the full potential of it too. That must be an exciting challenge for you, Margaret.
Yes, it is.
Well, the very best of luck with winter training and the season ahead and your partnership with her. And thank you for coming on the program.
Okay, thank you so much.
And that's it for this week's program. Don't forget you can keep up with all the latest news either online at useventing.com or on our social media channels. And if you prefer to listen to the show on the go, you can download the podcast from the iTunes podcast store. Just look for USEA. Until next week, thank you for listening wherever you are and enjoy your eventing.